Podcast. Today we have a man on the show. He's director, writer, and a character in the film, and a man who also know I owe an apology to because I cannot figure out time change or understand what state the man lives in. Derek Fury is here with his film Lion Killer. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, man? Pleasure to be here. Finally, we got it figured out, but it's all good.
A little bit of laptop issues. Everybody knows the other side. We've been trying to get this done for about half an hour, but that's all good. We can start now. Let's start at the beginning. Where did you film this? What town? What city? Because it definitely looks like a quaint town.
Well, it's actually the bustling metropolis of Houston, Texas, fourth largest city in the United States. But some of the external shots were shot in a suburb of Houston called Katy. So when you see kind of like the old mill and him, you know, Michael, the main character, walking around, that actually is it's an area called Old Katy, which is actually was a quaint little town until about 10 years ago when it kind of blew up. But there's still a section of that that's still old and kind of quaint like that and kind of sullen when you just take, you know, photography of it. So we use a lot of that as externals, exteriors. But some of the exteriors with the graffiti and more of the urban setting was in the area of Second Ward in Houston, Texas.
I'm shocked because you had me fooled. You could say you're in some small town. I would have accepted it completely.
Well, yeah, I just wanted that kind of feeling that, you know, he's kind of isolated, you know, so it did.
Definitely get that across. There's no doubt about you. So that was one of your themes in your films. We could start there. You would definitely played up the isolation angle.
Yeah, well, I'll say a little bit about it first. You know, my film is Lion Killer, and it's a story of a struggling Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor who loses his jiu-jitsu instructor, who dies, and then he's kind of left with a business partner who splits on him, and he's kind of left with a gym that's struggling, and he's a young man that comes from trauma, trying to figure out his life, meets a young woman who also comes from a traumatic background with domestic abuse, and it's about two people trying to connect that really don't have the skill set yet to connect, and they're trying to figure out their own stuff while trying to build a relationship. But yeah, to get back to and the film is free to watch right now on Amazon Prime and Tubi, so please check it out. But I gotta get my plug in. But yeah, you know, there's different characters, and different characters in the film have different feelings. You know, the character of Michael, the male lead, definitely is in a world that's kind of crumbling around him. And as I said, he doesn't really have the skill set as a young man, kind of forced to go it alone for the first time to really cope with that. So the exteriors were really a metaphor for what's going on inside of him. So there's a lot of, you know, shots inside the gym, him sleeping on the couch. We try to get wide shots of that to just show this vast empty space, and he's in the corner and alone. And then you've got characters like the Victor character that usually has people surrounding him. He kind of holds court. He's an individual that draws people to him as a charismatic person, but maybe not with the best intentions all the time. So we just use that as a metaphor to really build the world of the characters.
Well, let's get a little bit more of your filmmaking. You're an independent producer. You have a lot of stuff going on in your film. You have a bus, a factory, a giant office building. You have an amusement park. So where do you get all that stuff?
Are you still there? Did I lose you? Okay.
No, I'm here. Go ahead.
I did something crazy here. We stole those shots. You know what I mean? Typical indie filmmaking. You know, a lot of stuff like the bus shots, you know, just me and my small crew. Shout out to everybody that worked on Lion Killer who really gave it their all. But, you know, it was like, hey, we're getting on this bus. We shot the film with DSLRs. So that really is an advantage in a lot of ways because people just think you're taking pictures a lot of times. But in particular, what you're talking about is like there's a scene in the beginning where he wakes up, he's going to work, he goes to the bus stop, there's the factory right there. I spent a lot of time in that area. It's the Second Ward of Houston, a historical area, predominantly Hispanic. That's why there's a lot of the Hispanic murals and whatnot. But that factory in the background, he's standing in the bus and there's a factory. There was a whole ordeal about it because somehow there was a miscommunication with my DP and they set up at the wrong bus stop. They went ahead of me, and when I got there, it was like, we're losing daylight, guys, and we're at the wrong bus stop. And they were all kind of like, oh, you know, what's the difference? Well, just the fact that you mentioned that shot tells me, you know, I saw the framing in my head that him standing right there waiting for the bus, the factory in the background. But that factory is no longer the Maxwell House plant, but for years it was Maxwell House where they brewed coffee. So you'd go in that area, and if you were there at the right time, it just smelled glorious, like fresh roasted coffee, that whole area. I think it's still a coffee roasting plant, but something else. So yeah, there was a lot of just the local, infrastructure of that area that we used to our advantage and basically just stole all those shots because this is a very low budget. It's a micro budget indie. I don't think at one time anyone ever stopped us and asked us for permits. I don't even know if Houston does that. If you got to get permits to shoot on this, maybe if you're shutting a street down, but just to shoot publicly, we rocked with DSLRs, a small crew, and really, really just killed it.
Well, that's great to hear. The dojo. You spent a lot of time in the dojo.
Yeah.
So, do you take jiu-jitsu, or you must have known somebody that has jiu-jitsu in the dojo?
Well, I'm wearing the Tama hat, and that's a brand of like kimonos of geese. But yeah, so I've been doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu since 2005, and I've thrown Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournaments. I've match made and promoted MMA fights, and I was really connected to the local Houston martial arts communities, in particular the jiu-jitsu / MMA community, in a major way. And another shout out is that community, the jiu-jitsu community in Houston, I couldn't have made the movie without, because all the people you see in the movies were extras. They're people I knew, some well, some just in passing, but I put a call out, hey, who wants to be in this movie? So when you see the gym and you see there's jiu-jitsu people, those are all legitimate jiu-jitsu people who donated their time to be in the movie. A lot of them, I have to give them credit for, because you train for years to get a certain belt ranking, and I was just taking belts off of people and giving them lower belts. You know, it's a movie, right? And everybody was a great sport about it. But making a micro budget movie centered around a niche that you are connected with in a deep and real way, I can't underestimate. That's really the way to make a movie. If you knit on a high level and you want to make a movie, you need to make a movie about knitting, because there's so many people that you've come in contact with that will be gracious with their time. And, I guess to your question, yeah, I've done jiu-jitsu for a long time. The gym that we shot at, the dojo, is a friend of mine, who has it was a Taekwondo school, and he was a great sport as well, because I've known him since he was a kid. And now he has his own Taekwondo school, but we shot on weekends. So we shot, mostly Saturdays and Sundays, some Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays, but he let us come in, just dress the set, his Taekwondo school, as it were, a jiu-jitsu school. And in actuality, the two gyms, the rival gym, which was Michael's gym and Victor's gym, that was in the same building. That was in the same warehouse, just two different rooms. One room, we painted all the walls, made it dark, gave it cool contrast, and lit it in a certain kind of low-key way to really bring out the drama. And Michael's side, we did different things with the lighting and different things with the staging. But that was the same area. And once again, you're shooting a micro-budget film. There's not really a lot of time to run around. We're shooting here in Houston, is a massive, like I said, it's the fourth largest city in America. So to go from one side of Houston to another side of Houston, dealing with traffic, that could be an hour, hour and a half. So we just tried to shoot in one location, dress it to make it seem like it was multiple locations. And then, there were few exterior shots and a few other key days that we did in other places, but 90% of our shots, 90% of our shooting days were done at that Taekwondo gym.
So did you have to repaint the walls back to the way they were when you left?
No, he did. The guy who owned the gym. It's kind of one of those deals where it's like, I guess he didn't like it. His wife liked it. They're co-owners. And so the wife was like, leave it. I love it. We're going to keep it. Then I came back a couple weeks later to check them out, and I guess he came in there with just a paintbrush, but I would have. So just to clarify, I would not, if he didn't like it, I would not have left it that way. I definitely would have gone back. But I think they were such good sports, and I think eventually, I think his name is Joseph. I think he just went in there without telling his wife and just started painting. He's that kind of guy. But I ended up teaching jiu-jitsu over there at his school after the movie, after we wrapped, up until just recently, with the, you know, everything that's going on with COVID. But so I was connected with that building that we shot for a couple years straight. So
the uniforms of the actors, are you using the gym's gis then, or did you bring a different set of gis in?
That's another whole thing. So once again, just being in the community, and I've done a lot with even gis. I've worked for gi companies and done stuff like that in the past, but I just put out another call to the local jiu-jitsu community to donate gis for the movie. I got a lot of donations for gis in. So a lot of the old tattered gis, let's see if I had one here. Oh, I think I've got it right here. So this is one of the gis in the film. And we did make the patch original for the film, but this was one of the gis that was donated. And when we went through the gis and you looked at it, I mean, it just kind of told the story of, if anyone hasn't seen the movie, watch the movie, but there's a lot of conflict around just this gi. So the fact that this gi belonged to a certain person, now someone has it, was one of the major conflicts in the film, which speaks to kind of the heart of jiu-jitsu about how important certain things are and passing tradition down to generations under you are. But a lot of people donated gis, but we also did get a gi sponsor. So there's a local gi company called Club Boost. Give them a shout out. They make awesome gis. He also donated a lot of gis. So probably about half the gis we had were donated, and half the gis, if anybody doesn't know the gi, it's a kimono. It's what you wear when you do martial arts. Half of those were donated by Club Boost. And if you watch the movie, you'll see a lot of the Club Boost logo in the film. So I was happy to be able to give back to him that he came to our premiere, and his logo was all over the film. So he got his money's worth.
So you set up your lead character at times for failure, I thought, on numerous occasions. Did you ever want him to be successful?
What I wanted to do is, and that's a really good question, because I wanted people to feel a lot of, probably every character in the movie in some way is going to be based on my experiences in my life in some way. I'm pulling from everything I know, whether that's Michael, Noel, whether that's the boss who fires him. You know, I've had all these experiences, but particularly with Michael, what I wanted to do was, because I had an interesting way of growing up, which was very sullen and very by yourself and kind of in, you know, I grew up in the projects and all kind of inner city environments. And I really didn't have a father figure or uncle or anyone to give you advice. So a lot of things I had to do was I had to figure out things on my own, and you make a lot of mistakes in doing that. But there's a feeling you get when you don't have anyone to turn to, that it's just this feeling of just total aloneness. I don't know if that's even a word, aloneness, but I wanted people to feel like what that's like, to really have no one to turn to, and you don't have really the experience to figure it out on yourself. So you're flying blind. I do feel that if you watch the movie, you do see his victory, but also in the victories, it's the small things and the subtle things that are really life-changing that I wanted to convey. And I guess that's for the audience to decide if I was successful in that. But the last scene in the movie, really, for me, when I watch it, I totally get it. And it makes sense that this is the victory that he has, and life, it's up to him from this point. Life can be better, but it's up to you. You've got, I took the character to a point where now you can start to really make significant changes in your life.
So I did have a question in the film. He does get fired from a job. I don't think I'm ruining anything here. So who fires the janitor? I was trying to figure that out in the film. I was kind of like, don't you need him?
Well, it's kind of like getting fired on your day off for stealing boxes. a reference to the movie Friday. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, I've been in those positions where it's like you're struggling to pay your rent. You're struggling to pay all your bills. You're working two and three jobs. And then you just go to work one day and they're like, we don't need you anymore. You know, so I've been there, for jobs I was doing, you know, I felt I was killing it at. And it's just one of those things. We got to let somebody go. It's going to be you today, you know? So, yeah, I kind of took him I forget who made the statement. You might know, but, in reference to filmmaking, what you do with the characters, you put them up in a tree and you throw rocks at him.
So true.
You know, so I was definitely trying to do that with Michael, because like I said, in my 20s and into my 30s a little bit, I definitely had that feeling that I was just up in a tree holding on to one branch, and there was just, people would just come by and throw rocks. So, I wanted people to really kind of feel that for the character.
This film spends a lot of time, and it is throughout the film, even up to the end, setting up characters. So you're always setting them up to teach me new things, to learn new things, to constantly don't accept the normalcy of these characters. Mm-hmm. Something is constantly changing, including yourself, who plays an actor in the film.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You constantly give yourself changes. So was that your plan as a scriptwriter, to constantly surprise your viewer with new ideas?
Well, first I take it as a compliment that I was constantly doing. I don't know that I was, I definitely want to leave the viewer with the understanding that these characters are changed, that they all played a role in changing each other's life. And that was a major purpose for why I wanted the character that I play, which is Garrett, and the character of Noel, those three characters, and the character also of Maxie, and even the character of Victor, because that was written on the page a completely different way that I was rewriting and dealing and talking to the actor, CJ Hancock, who's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and he's actually living in LA right now, trying to get work as an actor and a stuntman. So look up CJ Hancock, give him a gig. He's definitely worth it. But I wanted to leave the viewer with a feeling that they are changed in a significant way, and that they all changed each other's lives. It wasn't just the cliche of the male lead finds a girl, challenges him to see life through you know, rose colored glasses, and he's changed. A lot of times, especially as a young man, you need an older male figure. And in a lot of ways, Michael was looking for, he'd had his instructor who had passed, and now he kind of needed someone else to come and fill that void for him. But one person can't do it. So it's really how we as a community affect each other's lives and change each other is what I was going for.
Did the character of Victor smoke in real life, and did he smoke in real life?
That's like the number one question people ask. You said the character of Victor?
Sorry, character of Michael.
Michael, yeah. Sure. I was like, did I have a scene with Victor smoking?
No.
No, Michael doesn't smoke, and I don't smoke. But I will say one of the major issue we had was getting Matt Meehan, who played Michael, to smoke convincingly. Because he would do a thing, and I really cut around a lot of, like, just his awkwardness with the cigarette. It was very awkward the way he would hold it. And, so we would do, cause I have smoked in the past. I don't smoke currently, but, I would get with him and we would smoke cigarettes, and I'd like, look, man, take this pack home, smoke the whole pack. You know, I don't want to make a movie where where people are pointing, going, the guy's not a smoker. Have you ever watched a movie where someone's supposed to play the guitar and you could tell that they've never even held
it? Yes.
Like, just the way they hold it is awkward.
Yeah, it doesn't look right.
Exactly. So it's like, I can't do that. And I even told Matt one time, you're not going to die from smoking on the set of this movie. You will not. It will not kill you. But what will kill you is me, is if you don't look convincing smoking the cigarette. And that was just a way to get the two characters. That was the MacGuffin. Cigarette smoke was the MacGuffin to get these two guys in the same area just talking and being open. I could probably do the same thing with drinking coffee. That's kind of been done to death. And it's also a kind of a counterculture thing right now, where people ask me that all the time. Do you smoke? Well, do you smoke? If I do a Q&A, do I smoke? No, the character of Garrett smokes and the character of Michael used to smoke if you watch the film, but not currently, no.
I figure it's a fair question. I have to ask these things.
Not everybody has.
Noelle, before she came on to the film, the character of Noelle, I didn't write down her real name. Does she know martial arts before the film? Or does she teach her anything?
Well, yeah, we did a lot. Regina now is a pretty committed martial art, as is Matt. What's interesting about the film is that I cast actors first, and then we went through kind of a training. I'd get together with actors, and we'd go through a jiu-jitsu training and a little bit less with Regina. Her name's Regina Ting Chin. She was a Houston-based actress. Now she's an Atlanta-based actress, and I have to give her a shout-out because she's a huge talent. But since Lion Killer, she's gone on to be on – look up her IMDb. She's been on Watchmen and Dynasty and a lot of network shows and cable shows. But she's a huge talent and somebody who really hadn't been given an opportunity to really be a lead, who the first time I met her, I knew she was a lead. But we would get together with the actors, especially Matt, go over jiu-jitsu. CJ was also instrumental with that, teaching Matt jiu-jitsu moves and not only moves, but the psyche and the mentality of someone who's been doing jiu-jitsu for 10, 15 years. It's hard to explain to the uninitiated, I should say, but jiu-jitsu is really different than taekwondo or a lot of things. There's really a jiu-jitsu mindset, and I can get around somebody who's been doing jiu-jitsu for a while and immediately know this is a jiu-jitsu person, just the way this person thinks and kind of holds themselves, and there's this quiet kind of strength about them. But since then, Matt is, he was already, instructing kickboxing, but now he's, pretty committed to in his jiu-jitsu walk. Regina's doing, she's really passionate about kickboxing. She's doing kickboxing videos on YouTube, in Atlanta. So, and then there was other members of the crew who are now doing jiu-jitsu. So it was kind of infectious for people to be around the culture. And I think what really happened was those big days where we had extras and they were all jiu-jitsu men and women who had been training for several years. Once people get around that and they see the kind of unity and the brotherhood and sisterhood of that the community has, I think a lot of people really get impressed and want to be a part of that. So before, no. Now, yes, they're all pretty committed martial artists. My work is done.
You did well. Does Noelle really speak Chinese, or did you tell her to speak it for the film?
I taught her everything she knows. No. No, Regina, yeah. So Regina is, she's Chinese American, and is it Mandarin she speaks?
It could be Mandarin. I wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah, right. But no, she's fluent, and that was one of the things. So that scene where she's even speaking, I think that was maybe one of the first scenes we shot, and I hadn't told the crew that it would be in another language. So the scene where she's speaking on the telephone and she's speaking in her native tongue, it was written in English. I asked her, just do it in your native tongue. Yeah, I think it is Mandarin. I don't think she speaks Cantonese. I think it's Mandarin she speaks. So, we started rolling. And I guess I just forgot to tell the crew, you know, it's your first film and you're putting all these pieces together. And I remember, our DP, Dave, and by the end of the set, the end of the shoot, we were just calling him DP Dave. But, I remember he shot it, he puts the camera down. He's like, I'm in a foreign film. Like, he didn't know that. I guess he thought the rest of the film would be in Cantonese as well. But, no. So yeah, she, that's something I wanted to work in. And that's another thing about being an independent filmmaker. It's kind of like, what's the old saying? Consume every part of the buffalo. You know what I mean? So she does something that I think is incredible. So let's put that in the movie. And this person has geese. Let's put that in the movie. So the Robert Rodriguez method of finding out what you have and kind of, I didn't build a script around it, but I reworked my script around what I had.
Did you always have the class or abuse women built in, or did you have another idea for that?
Say it again, I'm sorry?
You have a class of abused women?
Yeah. Well, the way you say it is like a class, like that's a like a hierarchy class.
You mean, sorry. Yeah.
There's a few scenes in the film where it's a group meeting of women that have all come from traumatic experiences of domestic abuse. And your question is, was that always in the script? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Did you ever think of doing something else for that, or you really wanted that to be the focal point to drive your character?
You know, you make a movie, you're working on it for so many years, then you try to go back and realize, and everything's kind of all jumbled together. But like I said, the way I grew up, I grew up in the projects, and we spent some time in homeless shelters when I was in my early teens, and there was a lot of women dealing with these issues, and I know I took note of it. And things like, you know, these experiences and conversations I had with women, sometimes in my teens, sometimes in my 20s, stuck with me. So I, as memory serves, that was always in the script. And there was now her monologue at the end was not in the script. I had written her character much more subtle. And then when we were in rehearsals and we started to shoot, it was kind of obvious to me that the character Noelle needed to say something at the end of her experience. And I didn't say anything, but Regina called me and she's like, I think we were talking via text. I really think Noelle should say something. Cause I think I'd written it as she kind of smiles at the end and you kind of know that she's made a change, but needed something more, needed more meat than that. And so I sat down in front of the computer and wrote her monologue in one shot and sent it to her. And then I think she reworked it slightly. And I believe we even had a little bit of Mandarin in the first draft of that monologue. But really we worked out that scene that really is the scene people talk about in the film, her big monologue, on set day of. You know, it was really like sitting with her in when I say not really her dressing room, we shot that scene at where I was working. And I was working at the local college, and I went through the film school at that college, and so they kind of had open door policy, let me come in and shoot. So my office was kind of like her makeshift dressing area, which was also important because that was a big emotional day, and she needed to be separated from just everybody to prepare, really to open up emotionally like that. So to any filmmakers out there, be very sensitive about what your actor is doing on that day. But I was able to sit in the dressing room with her and we were talking about it and we kind of reworked it last time. And then we shot it and it was like the first time we shot that scene, I yelled cut. You could hear a pin drop in there. And I look around and some of the ladies on set are kind of wiping their eyes. And that was also one of the earlier shoot days, maybe third or fourth day into it, to drop something that heavy on an actress and to see her really take it and just knock it out. So yeah, Regina Ting Chen, she's a huge talent, and I think we're definitely gonna see a lot more from her.
That's good to hear. You do have a mural in your film at one point. Did you pick that mural for a certain purpose?
Not for a certain purpose, because I believe we shot that day when we shot murals, we shot a bunch. Now, whether I decided on that mural to put it in there, I won't say there's no hidden meaning. If somebody wants to watch the movie and get really into, like, I think Fury was saying by this by this mural something, I won't say I wasn't, but we shot a lot of murals that day, and I'm an artist. I've done music. I draw and do a lot of stuff, so what it came down to was a lot of the best looking shots got in the film. There weren't key performance related shots.
So when you get to the comeback sequence of your film, did you do blocking beforehand, or did you show them? Obviously you had to show them the moves. You've told me that because you do take jiu-jitsu. So how much was that a fight you've had in the past, or is this just created out of your head?
Now, so you're talking about like the big fight scene. I don't want to say the big fight scene. This is an independent feature, so as big as you can get on our budget.
But yes. But
as far,
I'm not going to ruin anything, but that's exactly where I'm going, yes.
But I will say this. I mean, that fight scene is completely authentic to jiu-jitsu, and that was my major thing. That like people who do jiu-jitsu watch this film. If anybody comes back to me and go, "Oh, that fight scene was BS," I would have been disappointed. But no one has, because it's really authentic to the nature of jiu-jitsu as far as like blocking it out and choreography. CJ Hancock, once again, was the fight choreographer on the film. So basically I would relay beats and ideas to CJ. I'd like to see this, and kind of like a rhythm, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And he kind of took it and then would add to it, subtract from it, really make it a cool fight. But also like I said, he's a jiu-jitsu black belt. So he really knows his stuff. And, then we relay that to Matt, rehearse it. Once again, this is indie filmmaking. So we're shooting on weekends. People have jobs. People have this going on. When we had time with Matt, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure we even rehearsed that day of, or maybe he had a few of the moves down, but really worked it that day of, hey, we're going to go work lights. I'll come back and see you guys in 30 minutes. Let me see what you have. And then, you know, we tweak it a little bit. But Matt, to his credit, is just very coachable and also super athletic and super, he catches things super quick. He's another guy that if you're looking for a guy in your film, you should probably think about hiring, because he's the kind of guy you just kind of relay what you want. Well, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do this. And he kind of gets the moves and really executes very well. So the cast I put together and the crew, it's one of those things. I was very lucky, but yeah, we blocked that day of, as is the nature of micro budget filmmaking.
Shooting at night for you on your first budget feature. You do a lot of tight shots. I would even say in the car, you have a lot of car shooting.
Yeah. One of the scenes we cut out was a scene in the car. Cause it's like, hey, where can we shoot? Well, we're shooting a bunch of stuff in the gym, both, you know, Victor's gym and Michael's gym, all that shot out. We could shoot in a car. Then of course there's the scene that's in Galveston. I don't know, you're from Canada, but you know, down here in Texas, Galveston's the beach. It's on the Gulf.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah, they've got one of those, big piers, like a pleasure pier with, you know, rides and Ferris wheels and all that. But what we shot a local carnival for, because we couldn't get down to, it's a 45-minute drive from Houston, to get to Galveston. But yeah, so it's just, the tightness of some of the shots, the car scene, especially the argument, they're kind of like breakup scene, that shot with intention, like tight shots. Whereas like we're at the carnival, wider shots, more scenery. The carnival gave us hundreds, or at least 100 extras. Of course, none of them knew they were extras in a film. But I'll say this, if you want some free mise-en-scene in your film, go to a carnival, because no one will stop you. You know, we were at the carnival shooting and no one cared. The people, not only the people that run the carnival, they didn't care. We were there shooting. It was basically very small. It was that day. It was because I wanted to shoot small, because we're stealing these carnival shots. It was me, my DP, his first assistant, and, who else? The actors. And, we're just running around shooting it. And even the people that are there, no one's even looking at you. People are so over photography now. No one's in your shot trying to look silly or throw rabbit ears. People are just turning around. So when I went to edit the film, I edited the feature myself. I hardly had any shots I couldn't use because people had their backs to us the whole time. You know, no one was interested in what we were doing. So yeah, we shot with intention. Some shots were intentionally tight. Some shots were intentionally large. But we really shot with what we had.
Well, being an independent filmmaker, do you find that you couldn't really waste any shots? You couldn't attempt things? You had to know exactly what you wanted because you're on a tight budget.
Yeah.
And on a time scale.
Yeah, you know, it's one of – yes and no for us because I also wanted to give everybody there who was donating their time or being paid far under what they should be being paid for the ability to feel like they had some influence on the film. Now, of course, as a director, I've got the final say, but I also want to listen to people's creativity. There were a lot of meetings about how we're going to shoot it. But as you know, you get on there, somebody's got an idea. If we had time, we would definitely do that. I can't guarantee you'll be in the film, but if you've got a good idea, let's try this. But also with the actors. So there were, when I shot the actors, we talked about certain performances. I'll give them direction. And then there would be shot. Then there would be at the very, say we shot that scene three times. I'd say, okay, this shot right now, this take rather, go for it. Do what you want to do, you know. So it was important for me to use everyone's creativity, but of course, I myself having the final say. And editing your own film gives you the absolute final say. So yeah, there was a lot of time constraints. But one of the things I really learned a lot from is next time I could probably even do less shots. You know, first couple of days we were shooting way too many shots, and then by the end, it was very much like two takes. Let's go, let's go. So going forward, I think, you know, I'd take more of that approach.
How about music in your film? How'd you get that?
Now that's a good story. So all the music in the film, another shout out. Good friend of mine, Vince Lichtleiter, lead singer of a band called Jonah 33. You can look them up. They put out three albums. But a real good friend of mine, like I said, I did music for a lot of years, did hip-hop music. And I met Vince years ago, I believe in Oklahoma. We were both booked at the same gig in Oklahoma. And just one of those guys that I naturally, you know, we just got along with real well, and we've always stayed in contact with. And he's come down, and we've worked on one of my last EPs that I did several years back, and just an outstanding guy. And, after, you know, this is the thing. If you want to make a movie, say you ask me at 18, what do you want to do? I want to make a movie. Well, how are you going to get somebody to donate their time to make songs for you because you won't have a budget? I couldn't have manipulated a way to get people to give me free scoring and free original songs. He did all the scoring for the movie and did, what, four or five original songs for the movie. That's just through building relationships with people and trying to just be a friend of people. And then you can ask for favors because you've probably done stuff for them, and it's natural for that person to do it. So I called Vince and just said, hey, man, I'm working on this movie. I want you to do the music. And that was the conversation. He just started working on it from there. So all the songs are original by Vince Lichtleiter. All the score is original by Vince Lichtleiter. And people even said, hey, Derek, why don't you put one of your songs in there? And it's like, I didn't, because I don't know. I just wanted Vince to just, you know, I wanted to be a Vince Lichtleiter musical project. So that's another question people ask in the Q&A's, who did the music? Because everyone loves the music. So all those songs are original and the score is original. Shout out to Vince.
Well, I feel bad. I'm asking all the same questions everybody else is.
I've been on the circuit for a while, man.
Well, I hope I asked a few nobody else has. So
no, you definitely have. You definitely have.
Okay, good. Now we're going to go to my favorite part of the show that I know you've prepped for. It's fun questions.
Okay.
Your sure. Favorite film, please.
My favorite movie is The Karate Kid.
Actually, I will accept that from you 100%. I might even take it some Jean-Claude Van Damme films.
Oh, well, dude, Van Damme is like, that's next to Keanu, that's a living, that's an American treasure right there. But Keanu's got the, got it wrapped up as a national treasure right now after, The Matrix, John Wick, and the Bill and Ted trilogies. So.
Okay, yeah, we're going to go a little bit off topic before I get my next. Did you watch Tiger Claw? I think I had the right name of the film.
Tiger Claw? No, I'm not familiar with that.
The one when he plays, he's a karate master.
Who are you talking about? You're talking about a Van Damme movie?
No, Keanu.
Where he's a karate master. He did a Man of Tai Chi that he directed.
That's the one. Sorry, I had the wrong name. Man of Tai Chi.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he directed. Oh, yeah. I've got it here somewhere, Man of Tai Chi. Yeah.
I can't remember.
If Keanu does it, I'm about it. That should be my yearbook quote if I was back in high school.
You can't have that as your next answer for this question. Since people can't see you and I'm the only one, you have a ton of films behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So what film would you recommend that's not very rarely seen and people should see more of besides Lion Killer?
Oh, crap. I was reaching for the Lion Killer DVD. A film that is rarely seen that people should see?
Yes. Underrated, let's say.
Yeah, well, there's Ang Lee's Pushing Hands. I don't know if anybody has seen that. I really think you could see a lot of what I was trying to do with Lion Killer in that film, just a character study of humans that dealt with a martial arts environment. There's also another film from the 90s called Iron and Silk. People should look that one up. It's all martial arts related stuff. Hold up, my wife's writing something down. Oh, yeah, Brother? Yeah, Beat Takeshi's Brother. That's a good one. I don't know if anybody's seen that. If you're not familiar with Beat Takeshi, it's a gangster. He does gangster movies, like Japanese Yakuza movies. But he, in Japan, he also does like game shows. Like, you know, the game shows, the wacky game shows where people get knocked in the foam and all that stuff. He does those. And then he makes his own indie movies and they're all like gangster shoot 'em ups. So he did an American one with Omar Epps that's called Brother, but he's done an outstanding body of work.
Okay. The last question before I let you go, your favorite on set meal.
My favorite on set meal. Well, my wife wants me to talk about her burrito in a bowl. And I will talk about that burrito in a bowl because it was fantastic. So there was a day on set where – so this is the thing. Everybody wears multiple hats. I wrote, directed, edited. I had someone cast as the character of Garrett who dropped out. That's the only reason I'm in the film. You know, I did the on-set sound record. You know, I can go on and on. I color graded. So – but not only myself, you know, the DP's doing 3 and 4 jobs my first AD is doing 3 and 4 jobs and the costume designer, so on and so forth. Well, my wife who co-produced the film with me also did crafty. And, you know, a lot of days she did, you know, she really planned it out, really had her stuff together. But there was one day on set and it was a long day, like lunch. We had to get through a pretty big, heavy shoot to get to lunch. And she did the slow crock pot burrito. I don't know. I should ask her what was in it, but the burrito meat was just simmering in a crock pot 10 feet from where everybody was was doing their job for hours. And finally, and I just kept, okay, one more shot, one more take. We're going to reset back to one more. All right. And then finally I was like, okay, that's let's wrap for lunch. And you just hear everybody go, oh, thank God. Everybody just ran to the table and attacked this burrito in a bowl, you know. With all the sour cream and everything. What's that again? She's holding something else. What does it say? Tell me.
Cilantro rice.
Well, yeah, with her cilantro rice that she makes. So is that this great rice with this great, it was just fantastic. So yeah, that was my favorite on set meal. And so I think it'll be a tradition for my next, maybe we should do it when we wrap. Maybe that should be like the wrap meal. I don't know. We should make them wait for it.
Since we already know your film's available on Tubi, I think you said, and it's available on Amazon for free.
Amazon Prime, yes.
Now, can people order a DVD or poster or anything from you, t-shirt? It's a good time to promote it.
Well, the t-shirts, I'm wearing a t-shirt now, but the t-shirts are all sold out at the moment. I'm in the process of getting the DVDs pressed through the distributor and we're handling that together. So I would tell everybody to follow me on my YouTube, Derrick Fury, D-E-R-R-I-C-K-F-U-R-Y on my YouTube. Also Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everything's at Derrick Fury. And I'll keep you notified when the DVDs drop, when shirts are reordered. I do have a bunch of posters that were signed by the cast, so that could be a nice little thing as well. So just follow me, follow my YouTube especially, and I'll keep everybody notified. DVDs should be in soon.
Thank you for your time, and have a great night.
I appreciate you, man.